with Dr. Keith Suter.
Good afternoon, Dr. Keith Suter. How are you?
I'm very well, thanks, Ben.
That's good. Thank you for taking the time to talk to us this afternoon in your busy schedule. A couple of things we wanted to get across. Firstly, and foremost, it's a little more now than 12 months. We're going to 13, 14 months since the start of the Russian-Ukraine war. I remember when it first happened, Keith, you and I, when the news broke, you and I spoke very quickly after that. And you said in that discussion with me that you felt this war was going to be a long-term war, not a short-term war. Well, my goodness, your words have echoed in my ears many times in stories that I've read and heard in recent times. And it doesn't seem as though it is anywhere with an end in sight. Keith, could you, if you wouldn't mind, give us your thoughts as to exactly what has been achieved by Vladimir Putin in the last 12 months?
Yes, well, Putin has, since the invasion of February the 24th last year, he's managed to control about 20% of the country. So this is not much to show after a year of operations. Ukraine has surprised everybody, by contrast, as to how well they're doing. So the Russians have surprised us with how badly they're doing, and the Ukrainians have surprised us with how well they're doing. And I think that Ukraine is still on track, ultimately, to win the war. The problem will be that Putin thinks that he can outlast Ukraine. They've got more troops. There's 140 million people in Russia as compared with 40 million in Ukraine. And so he's just going to continue to grind on, just like World War One and trench warfare. It's called a war of attrition. And what he hopes ultimately is that the Western countries will get tired of supporting Ukraine and will just stop. His great hope, obviously, is in 2 years' time, Donald Trump returns to the White House, because Trump will certainly not be a big supporter of Ukraine. So he sees it as being a very long-term struggle, providing the Russians can stay in the game that long as well. They've got their own problems. They've used up a lot of their own weaponry. Their troops have performed very badly in the field. All sorts of problems at home for the Russians. But they think that they can win through. I'm not sure. I think that with Ukraine, there is a real desire. The morale is high, desire for freedom to protect their own country. And it's interesting, you know, that you often get this thing from the bean counters, you know, who says that what you can't measure, you can't manage, so you've always got to keep counting numbers. Well, if you do that, you'd say that Russia would win. But on the other hand, it sometimes the things that can't be counted are the ones that count. And this is a great example, because you can't count the level of morale. So you can sense it, but you can't count it. Clearly, the Russians have very low morale. A lot of the people don't want to be where they are at the moment. Meanwhile, the Ukrainians have got very high morale. And I think that that will ultimately win out at the end, providing Western countries continue to provide military support to Ukraine.
You said your thoughts are Ukraine will win the war. Can I ask you, Keith, what will a win look like?
Well, that's a good point. I'm not sure. And what, you know, a lot of Ukraine has been destroyed. Even if the war ended today, there'd be lots of problems with what's called unexploded ordnance, which will mean be difficult to go back to reuse as farming land, etc. What we've seen on February the 24th last year was the world's largest grain exporter invade the world's fourth largest grain exporter. So there are a lot of people who've now got food insecurity, particularly in Africa and the Middle East. A lot of people have got food insecurity as a result of Russia's invasion. And the problem will be just trying to reclaim that land, even if the Russians were to leave today, just making sure that that damage is going to be repaired. And Ukraine will need a lot of financial assistance to help to rebuild it. And, of course, the other issue is, well, what happens in Russia? My hope all the way along is that Putin would be removed by one of his own supporters. That hasn't happened. If he were to be removed, you might end up with a government that's even more nationalist, even more aggressive. On the other hand, you might end up with a government that wants to rebuild links with the rest of the international community and therefore become much more moderate. So, and of course, you've also got the problem of who gets the Russian nuclear missiles as well. So there are all sorts of issues here. For me, February 24th last year was one of the turning points of this century. There are just so many issues thrown up by that Russian invasion.
This week, Xi Jinping has sat down with the Russian President Vladimir Putin. They've had meals, they've had discussions. Do you think that the rest of the world actually believes that, you know, Xi Jinping has gone across there to talk peace and to try and end this war between Ukraine and Russia?
China is in a very difficult spot. China and Russia agree that they don't like the way in which the world is dominated by the United States. So that's what holds them together. The enemy of my enemy is my friend. So it is this desire by both countries to reduce American influence in the world. That's what keeps them together. On the other hand, China really wants the war to end because it just basically wants to get back to having a global economy ticking over nicely. China's got immense domestic problems. The COVID crisis in China has not been sorted out. There is a property bubble. There is a banking crisis emerging. And Xi really wants to concentrate just on those domestic issues. But the war is continuing to make life more difficult for him. So he's put forward this peace proposal, which I think is a waste of time. But it shows him trying to play a more neutral, peace-breaking role. It is interesting that amidst all the coverage that we've given to Ukraine, no one has identified in the media the fact that he has pulled off a diplomatic success in improving relations between Iran and Saudi Arabia. So these are two major Islamic countries that have been fighting each other in Yemen and elsewhere. And he's managed to bring those two countries together. So I think he sees himself now as a bit of an international peacemaker. And that's what he's seeking to do. But the problem for him is that all three parties have got different agendas. So China just wants the fighting to stop now. Just stop it. Stop it. Russia can't afford to withdraw with no control over some land. And they obviously are thinking of some sort of Korean Peninsula result whereby some of the land will be controlled by Ukraine and others will be controlled by Russia, a bit like we see the way in which Korea is divided. And then you've got the Ukrainians who said, we have suffered so much, we don't want to compromise. We want to fight through to the end and liberate all of our country. So the problem for China is that you've got all these different agendas floating around. I don't think much is going to come out of President Xi and his peacemaking.
The International Criminal Court has issued an arrest warrant for Vladimir Putin for war crimes. Just rhetoric?
No, it's more than that. I think that what they've done, because two-thirds of the world's countries, including Australia, do accept the jurisdiction of the International Criminal Court. Unfortunately, the United States, Russia and China don't.
Mm-hmm.
But what it means is that Putin now has a more restricted life. Putin loved traveling around the world and being seen with these other world leaders. Now he can't, because if he ends up in a country that does accept the jurisdiction of the International Criminal Court, they'll arrest him and send him to The Hague. So he now has a more restricted lifestyle. Now, it'll be interesting to see, will he go to India, which will be hosting this year's G20? Remember, we did that a few years ago in Brisbane. So India is hosting the G20 this year, and India does not accept the International Criminal Court either. So if Putin turns up, who wants to be photographed standing alongside him? So there is that immediate issue that, in fact, is going to be much more ostracized than before. In the long term, the risk that Putin runs, let's just assume the war goes badly, he's removed from power, not killed, as I'd prefer, but he's simply forcibly retired to a Dacca down in the Black Sea, which is where some of his predecessors have gone in the time of the Soviet Union. a new government wanting to improve relations with the West may well decide to hand him over to The Hague. And the precedent for this is what happened with the conflict in former Yugoslavia, where some of the people responsible for that conflict were eventually rounded up and sent to The Hague by governments that were seeking to improve relations with the West. And that must be Putin's fear, that if he is removed from power but allowed to retire, that eventually a government in Moscow will simply hand him over to The Hague. And where he'll go on trial and spend the rest of his life as a guest of the international community.
Well, for those reasons, obviously, Putin will be trying to hold on to power as long as he possibly can, to keep him in a position of authority.
Yes, there's no way out for Putin. You know, he sealed his fate on February 24th last year. He can't afford to lose. He can't easily fly to any other country to live in exile, which is quite often what some leaders, when they're doing badly, flee to another country. That's not going to work this time around for Putin, unless perhaps he wants to spend his final days in Beijing. They might give him diplomatic asylum, but it wouldn't be much of a life for him. So, yes, he's in a very difficult situation.
Just before I let you go, can I get your thoughts on Donald Trump? Like, there is all this talk about Donald Trump's going to be charged over this alleged hush money paid to the adult film star. He's launched a preemptive strike to control the narrative, I suppose. Can you see this happening today?
Well, it hasn't happened yet, and the only evidence we've got for it is what he himself said at the weekend, that he was due to be arrested. It's worth, having, I don't know how much time I've got, but just to set out, there are four court cases, potentially, and this is the weakest of the four. So this particular case revolves around paying hush money to a porn star prior to the 2016 election. Now, it's perfectly legal to pay hush money to a porn star, but what they did was to account for it wrongly. So it's a very technical issue as to how you put the figures into your company accounts. It's a very technical issue. And Alvin Bragg, who's the current New York District Attorney, has taken up the case where his predecessors have decided not to proceed. They don't think they can secure a conviction. The two witnesses for the prosecution will be the porn star, who's obviously of dubious morality, and Michael Cohen, the lawyer who did the work, and he's already gone to jail.
Yes.
So he's not going to be seen as a good witness either. So if I were a Trump lawyer, I reckon I could win this case on the grounds of saying, well, you're dealing with such unreliable witnesses.
Can you see Trump being, at the moment, there's no one ahead of him for the nomination of the Republican Party for the 2024 election?
No, I think he's probably going to do all right. There are some people who are thinking about putting their hands up. What he would like would be a lot of other people putting their hands up, because it'll be a rerun of 2016 where they all wiped each other out. He was left as the last person standing. And that's presumably what he would like. The problem is he's got three other cases against him, one relating to the January 6th riots, another one relating to the removal of top secret documents from the White House to his private residence when they should have gone into the National Archives. And the third one is that he was tampering with the election results by seeking to get the Georgia election official to award him the election when it was completely contrary. He hadn't won in Georgia. Any one of those three might also cause problems for Trump. And I think a number of Republicans are going to say, look, he's got too much baggage on him. He was great in 2016, but now he's a little shop soiled. Is there somebody else like Governor DeSantis of Florida for him to run? So the Republicans are not necessarily guaranteed to have him. Remember, it's a two-stage run, two-stage election. The first stage, you get the party nomination, so you always veer to the extreme to bring in the loyalists. But then during the campaign itself, the presidential election, you've got to move towards the center to win people over. And that's where he will have problems. And if Biden runs again, which is hard to imagine, but if he does, Biden's got a brilliant record as president. You know, people like myself ridicule him for his old age and all the rest of it. But he's got things done. You know, you had 8 years of a show pony with Barack Obama, who basically wasted 6 out of the 8 years. You had 4 years of a two-year-old's trauma in the White House. And now we've got a real adult running the country.
Okay, interesting times ahead. I'm going to have to love you and leave you there. It's been terrific to catch up with you. We'll talk soon. Thank you, Dr. Keith Suter.
Thank you.